CliffCentral.com. Welcome back to another episode of Unbranded. I am Timothy Maurice, and this is Unbranded, the show where we explore the link between human and brand behavior, how narratives evolve and shift, how the brain impacts human behavior, and how they work together. Today, we're going to be sharing a special episode, a repeat of a conversation with Joanna McDowell, who is the MD of a consultancy called IAS. She's going to be sharing about the art of getting the deal. And I believe in this day and time, with the uncertainty of the economy and complexity around the world and the era of Trump, and where people are just not sure about a lot of things, that getting the deal with a smaller pie is going to be increasingly more important. So stay tuned as I share this conversation. And I believe that if you want to get the deal, and by the way, that was not a referral to Trump. We literally are talking about the art of getting the deal. And I know he wrote this bestseller, The Art of Getting the Deal. But this episode really refers to the nuts and bolts of actually getting a deal. So hang out with us for the next few moments as we talk to Joanna McDowell on Unbranded. Again, you can email me, timothymaurice@gmail.com, with your insights, your thoughts about the show. I'd really appreciate it as we go further into exploring the brain and brand power to shift and make this world a greater place. Thank you.
Unbranded on CliffCentral.com.
And we're back. I'm Timothy Maurice, and yes, this is Unbranded. We're so excited. As always, the energy is alive in the studio. We have an extraordinary show today that I believe, particularly from an unbranded perspective, is we want to unpack and make very clear how it is you can create sort of the perfect pitch and how that perfect pitch can help take your brand to the next level. We have a leading authority from intermediary consultancy, Joanna McDowell, who is the founder, I think, and MD of IAS. And she has clients like Ogilvy, BBDO, Magna Carta, and so forth. We'll be sharing more of her details from her website and so forth in a while. But we believe, particularly at Cliff Central and Unbranded, that understanding what drives ideas, it's not enough just to talk about them. We want to go behind the scenes, tap into her 40 years of industry expertise. I mean, I'm going to question her about her 40 years because she looks like she must have started when she was 1 year old. And we are going to go deep into this conversation, and hopefully you're going to leave with two things. One is you're going to be able to use this content to create a perfect pitch, and you're going to see that there are opportunities and gaps that maybe you haven't taken advantage of that can take your brand to the next level. So whether you're an agency or you're an individual trying to pitch your ideas to a company, you're trying to get a job or whatever you're trying to pitch, the bottom line is agencies pitching to directors and marketing directors are some of the most fundamentally sound pitching models out there. So we can all learn. I think we can all learn from what the agencies have been doing and what Joanna has been able to share with her her clients and I think you call them subscribers.
That's right.
So Joanna McDowell, welcome to Unbranded.
Thanks for having me here.
It's really awesome to have you. And 40 years ago, wow. I'm imagining back then, I mean, there was no Facebook, there was no Twitter, there was no, was there cell phones?
No, there weren't. And I don't even think there were faxes actually then. Such a long time ago. I can't believe I've been working that long. But no, I think they had things like, what was it called before faxing? There was a, oh, I don't know, some way of people communicated.
Yeah, yeah.
Telephones probably.
Yes. So you would write. So you've been working, let me just be clear.
Yeah.
You have been working in and around the sort of agency space for 40 years.
Yeah, I'm a trained marketer, so
okay.
I'm qualified as a marketing expert or marketing person, and then I went into advertising and agency work for 15 years, and I've also worked on the client side, and now I'm advising both sides.
Do you know Jeremy Sampson?
Yes.
Isn't he brilliant?
Yes, he is absolutely one of the best.
Yes, awesome. Anyway, I just want to throw that out there. Thinking about the history of pitching, I was thinking coming in, I wonder who made the first big pitch?
I wonder. I bet you was one of the big ad agency guys. I mean, those guys have been doing it for more than 100 years now.
Oh, wow.
And it's interesting because just thinking about what you were saying earlier about how agency people are probably some of the best pitching people in the world. And I was actually doing we were having one of our masterclasses with one of the big auditing firms. And they were actually talking to me about maybe they should come along to our pitching classes because they think they could improve their pitches. Wow. I found that quite interesting. Interesting comment.
Maybe that's an opportunity for you guys at your firm, right?
It seems like it, yeah.
Right? Absolutely. So, yeah. You know, taking us back to, you know, where sort of all began for you. What was it about the sort of advertising marketing space that really drew you in as a person in general? Like, what is it you love about the advertising space? I can see your style, this sort of a swag that oozes over you. The style. I can see that, you know, expression is important to you.
Yeah, you know, the first of all, I fell into advertising by accident. I'd actually worked in marketing in the UK for a couple of years, and then I came out to South Africa on an adventure, as we British girls did back in the day. And it was meant to be a sort of 2-year adventure. It turned out to be a 12-year adventure.
Oh, wow.
And so when I got here, I tried to get into marketing in South Africa. And whether it was my British accent or the fact that I was female, which probably was, I couldn't get a marketing job. And I'd worked for one of the top marketing companies in the UK, so there was no reason not to hire me. But one of the marketing directors I spoke to said, "Why don't you go into advertising for a while?" And I said, "Advertising? Oh, really?" You know, so it was only ever meant to be a short-term solution. But in fact, I went into advertising, and I just loved it.
And back then, you know, some of the things that were common, like some of the pitching ideas, some of the things that you saw that were just commonplace.
Yeah, you know, to think about, has it changed over the years? There's always been a need to explain to marketers why something needs to be done in a certain way, how it can work. And, you know, in the early years when I was here, I was in advertising at the start of commercial television in South Africa. So that was even more interesting because these were the first commercials that were made. And the process is arguably a little bit quicker these days because of technology. But if I think about the thought process that went into them, it's the same.
The same.
And, and I think the explanation of why these things work and why it's important to have them, those things haven't changed. Wow. It's just become even more competitive.
Sure. We just have additional tools, the different things.
Okay. There's so many more channels, and every time you do a commercial, you've got to think about, okay, so what other things can we do? And now we've got so many other things we can do because it can go on to all the other channels that we have.
Yeah. Well, again, if you're just tuning in, this is Joanna McDowell. She's the founder and MD of IAS, which is a leading intermediary consultancy, and been doing really fascinating work. You put some innovative ideas on the table, like almost like speed dating type of stuff. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But I want to make sure, I want to level the playing field a little bit here, okay? One of the things that, people buy into people. You know, so how much of the pitch is about, you know, who likes who, how much they want to just really spend time with this person or this agency because they have the type of people, the personality dynamics, you know, beyond the actual technical aspect. How much of it is people driven?
It's very much people driven. And I would say that in the process that we run, the agency doesn't just pitch first time in a competitive situation, we actually kind of run a process where we go from a long list to a shorter list to a shorter list. And there's something called chemistry in between. So we have what we call chemistry sessions with the client and with the agency people, and it's part of the elimination process. So in a sense, it's a sort of what I would call the soft side of pitching, where the agency and the client get together. The agency isn't pitching per se in the sense of coming up with great ideas and all that kind of stuff. This is what I would call a bit of a meet cute, where everybody gets together There are certain questions, and obviously the quality of the agency's people and the way it asks questions. Those are the kind of things we get the marketers and clients to evaluate. And from there, it makes it easier to get down to the final two or three who will pitch. So what's really interesting about the chemistry session is really the whole, how are these, not everybody gets on. I mean.
Yeah, exactly.
And what we say to the agencies is, listen, if you go into a chemistry session and you can't see yourself working with that client, don't then stay in the process, because it's quite obvious to an agency if they can or can't. It's a bit tough to do. I haven't seen anybody pull out yet. But because why? You know, you always try and find a way, or you might put other people in the final pitch. But it is a really important part of the process. And in the final pitch itself, it counts as a big percentage of the score.
And in a country as diverse as South Africa, chemistry is very important, right? I mean, I can imagine a Zulu guy comes from KZN and he's, you know, pitching to a Afrikaans community from Stellenbosch, and they may have the perfect solution for each other, but there's an inherent, almost instinctual gap. How do people develop the chemistry when there's sort of that sort of default sense of maybe we don't get along?
You know, it's a very interesting question, because and I'm glad I've got the chance to answer this, because I was asked this by an agency about a month or so ago, and I don't think I answered it properly, because I think it's too easy to dismiss the racial diversity, gender, all that kind of stuff. These are very important factors in this market in particular, in any market, but in this market in particular, yes, because of the history.
Yes.
So I don't think people should be trying to match. So in other words, let's say the client has got three or four different racial groups, maybe, or diversity from a gender point of view. I don't think the agency should then automatically think, oh, I need to have a Zulu guy in, I need to have this guy in, I need to have an Afrikaans guy in. I don't think we have to do that, but I do think it needs to be taken into account.
Sure.
And the way you take it into account is normally in what you say, how you say it, and how you pitch it. So those are the kind of factors.
And generational dynamics, like you find, for example, let's say there's a more the client is very mature. They have global, like let's say a client is very mature. They have global sort of experience. Mm. And then you've got these little younger upstarts, irrespective of race. Mm. But you got these young upstarts that are really brilliant.
Mm.
But maybe they don't connect. How would you advise that they create chemistry between the age groups?
Well, again, what we always say to agencies is be authentic. And if your agency is peopled with young, fabulously talented, but inordinately different young people, that's your agency. So if that's, and if you're pitching to deeply conservative, much older folk, well, so be it. You know, you can't change those people. You are who you are.
Sure.
And it's like getting married. You can't pretend you're one thing, go down to the altar, get married, and then become the person you really are. You need to be authentic right from the beginning. Otherwise, it's going to fail.
Sure. Is there a such thing as the perfect pitch?
I've seen one or two. Gosh, I mean, where it's been so wonderful. You think, God, that's the magic. That's the magic. And they win. Sure enough, they win. But it doesn't happen that often. But when an agency is in the zone and they've got it absolutely right, gosh, it's just fantastic to be part of.
And who gets it right more often do you think? The larger or the smaller boutique type agencies?
No, I don't think there's any. I haven't seen any real, you know, you just see these moments of brilliance. Which, of course, is the inspiration and certainly keeps me doing what I do, because you see these moments of brilliance and you just think, oh, that was it. And it's when you spot that talent, or when we've, because obviously we visit agencies all the time, so that when clients talk to us about, well, who should we be talking to, we can be knowledgeable about agencies they probably have never heard of. And those are the most exciting. Wow. Pitches to be involved.
Sure.
In.
Mm. Now let's paint the picture. I want to make it really clear that your consultancy sits between a marketing director at a firm, a large company, and an agency trying to get their business.
Yeah.
So your ability to be able to sort of inspire a sort of process that allows the agency to be able to be better at pitching. To get the business is what you do on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to be clear about wanting people to be clear.
Yeah.
And
that's a great description, actually.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Have you seen cases? Have you seen cases where it hurts you? You know this agency has the capacity, but they just can't. They just really struggle taking a pitch serious.
Or they screw it up on the day.
Or they just and they just lose the business.
Yeah.
But you know they can actually do the job.
Yeah.
I wonder, I bet you there's a lot of organizations out there really struggling because they can't get the pitch right.
Yes, there are. And it isn't just about, I mean, agencies pitch all the time. I think the thing that they forget is whether you're a small agency or a big agency. In fact, what agencies say to me now is that if they don't have a pitch going on, there's something wrong with them. You know, what's happening?
We should be pitching.
We have to be pitching. I mean, I think it's, and that perhaps is one of the things that has changed in the last 40 years, because there seems to be a more frantic approach to it now than there was. And I think it's just because it's become so much more competitive. So, to answer your question more directly, I think there are a lot of agencies, small and big, who, although they do a lot of pitching, possibly aren't spending enough time on the practice leading up to it. And when I first went to something I go to every year called the Ad Forum Summit, and it takes place in New York, and it's where we go over. There's about 40 consultants from all over the world. I'm normally the only one from South Africa, and we go and visit agencies. And this is all set up for us, all arranged. It's the most fantastic week.
Wow.
We don't sleep for a week. I mean, we're out in the morning at 7:30. We're heading around New York in a coach, visiting agencies, and then we have to write our evaluations immediately after each visit. So on the first trip that I was on, I met a man, a New Yorker, who specializes in pitch management and training agencies on how to pitch.
Okay.
And he's a wonderful guy, and I've got his book, and I use a lot of his knowledge, and we see him every year. So one of the things he says is, for example, when an agency is doing a pitch, the first they've got to plan three rehearsals. Okay,
plan three rehearsals.
So, and the first rehearsal, as he describes it, is always a bit of a train wreck, because nobody quite knows what they're going to be saying, nobody's really thought about what the strategy is going to be that they're going to present, they haven't quite decided actually who's going to be in the pitch. So it's a train wreck. Okay, the second one. Things have come together a bit more. It's about a week later. Things have come together a bit more. People are starting to get the strategy right.
Sure.
The creative is now starting to work. Everybody's starting to feel more comfortable. So by the time you get to the third rehearsal, everybody's now in the zone.
You've settled in.
And
you've worked through the quirks.
That's how you need to be when you pitch.
Wow. And a lot of people go with the first. No rehearsal. They just go and blow it. And then they go, these people don't like us. Mm. We're to this.
So awesome. Rehearse, rehearse, rehearse. And I mean, you know, you're in the entertainment business, so you know that better than I do. And, and it does make a difference. Having said that, you could also rehearse to a point where you kind of go over it. And then the passion is lost. So then you see agencies where they do so much pitching and they're kind of there because they have to be there or they've agreed to be in it and they don't really think they're going to get it.
I see.
Or they found out who else is in the pitch, and now they're intimidated. Now, now, we very deliberately don't tell the agencies who the finalists are. Very deliberately, because otherwise all they worry about is each other, as opposed to staying focused on the... It's a psychological thing.
Sure, absolutely.
So, so some of them have kind of almost given up before they've come in. I've seen that. And they don't win.
Is there a ideal closure percentage? If you're going to pitch 100 times... The best agencies with market dynamic, economic dynamics, affirmative action dynamics, gender dynamics, all of those things in place. Is there a number that an agency can sort of shoot for?
Well, agencies want 100%.
Of course. Absolutely.
So, I don't know. I guess,
50-50, 80-20.
Yeah, they'd want to win between 60 to 70%.
60-70% is a good number.
Yeah.
Really?
Because, it's not possible to win every pitch you go into.
No.
But you do need to, one of the main reasons I set up this business here in South Africa is so that we could give agencies feedback. So I still believe the most important thing we do and the most gratifying part of what we do is after the pitch is over, we then go back to the agencies who won, the agency who won and the agencies who didn't win, and we give them direct feedback. So we almost like lift the veil on the pitch and tell them what really was going on behind the scenes, and we give them data feedback on how they and their team and everybody else performed.
Wow.
So that they can use that for the next time. And I get emails quite often now, and every time I get one, I think, oh, that's actually what makes this job worthwhile. I got one the other day from a very big agency in South Africa who have done a number of pitches with us, have never actually won one with us, but the feedback we gave them after the last one enabled them to go and win the next one they did, which we weren't running.
So a big part,
fantastic.
So a huge part of your value is the analytics from the pitch, not just winning the pitch.
No.
Yeah. Wow, that's beautiful.
Mm. And also often when agencies win a pitch, in the excitement of getting into the first few meetings with that client, everybody, including the client, forgets why they appointed that agency and what the work was that they approved to go ahead. So we're there as the reminder monitor to say, guys, remember, this is actually what you need to do, or this is what you said you were going to do, this was the brief, etc. So we kind of keep them on track.
I was speaking at a design conference in Bloemfontein, and I remember there was I can't remember which agency it was, but they did this massive sort of rebranding of Nedbank. And they were talking about how they, midway through the pitch, I think they stopped the pitch and said, we need more research on your brand. We need to be more connected. How important is really understanding the business objectives of the brand beyond the brief?
Mm.
How important is that?
It's very important because it kind of sets the context for the work and for the way in which the agency will work with the client. So what we try and do in a pitch process, well, we always do, in fact, we don't allow the pitch brief to be airy, what I would call airy-fairy. So it's not one of those, oh, what would you do with my brand if I appointed your agency briefs? It's not one of those. It is very much about, we have a specific project that has to go ahead in the next 3 months. This is what it's got to do. These are our overall business objectives. This is the brief. And it's a real brief. So the agency that wins that pitch will implement that campaign. And we take great pride in the fact that I would say, 90% of all the pitches that we've done, the work has been implemented.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
And the agencies have told me that, oh, but that never happens. And I said, but it has to happen. Otherwise, you don't make any money. You know, come on.
Sure. You have global experience.
Yes.
What does South Africa seem to master and get right over what you've seen internationally?
I think it's an absolute obsession with creativity. And a determination to really push things. And there's a unique thing about South Africans, which really, they like being up against it. Hey? They really like being up against it.
It's like rugby. Like,
yeah.
Put me up against the biggest, the baddest. We're going to figure it out.
Yeah. And they do.
Absolutely.
It's fantastic.
After the break, we're going to be chatting about some to-do, some strategy, some key insights, some please don't do this type of stuff. Please make sure you do this type of stuff.
Okay.
I'm really enjoying the conversation.
Great.
Hang in there. We'll be right back.
Choice. Sometimes you have it, and sometimes you don't. AutoTrader gives you the choice. Now you can shop, compare, and buy new cars. Watch our expert video reviews and research before you buy. AutoTrader New Car. The choice is yours.
CliffCentral.com. Download the Cliff Central app. Available now on the Apple App Store and Google Play Store.
And we're back. We're talking the perfect pitch. Is there such thing as a perfect pitch? We have an industry expert who is the founder and MD of IAS Consultancy. You can go to their website at www.agencyselection.co.za while you follow the conversation, do a little bit of research. Her name is Joanna McDowell. Extraordinary experience, not just in South Africa, but around the world. I like what you said earlier about what in engaging this New York conference, being able to go into some of the top global agencies and really sort of learn sort of global sort of trends and so forth, because I really do think that's important, because there are specific silos and there are specific niches that South Africa is have mastered. But then there are other areas where there's still opportunity for growth. And are there a couple things that you see that the sort of this market should sort of consider as a focus area?
Well, what normally happens is we pick up trends that it's quite obvious that the South African agencies are going to follow those trends because they're already starting. But they might just be about six months to a year before they implement them. So it's really good to come back from New York and then to be able to share what I've seen, and for the agencies to, and I see them, you know, they're sort of nodding and saying, oh yeah, no, we're starting to do that, or we are going to do that. So yeah, I mean, and things come up like, one of the agencies it's a worldwide agency now, but an agency we've been seeing for 10 years is an agency called Sapient Nitro. And the first time I watched their presentation, I actually thought I was in outer space. I mean, they really, they were so far ahead. It was just extraordinary. And we saw them again this year. And I think what's happened is they've just become even better at understanding what clients want, and knowing the questions that clients don't know to ask.
Yes.
But being really humble and able to almost encourage those clients to talk about the things that they don't even know they don't know. That's
brilliant.
Strong stuff.
That is strong. You know, we have on WeChat, Speco, he says, what if I come up with a 30-second advert for Coca-Cola? Just out of his own initiative. It's like he doesn't really represent anyone. You know, part of this sort of new open source world we live in. And I go and pitch it to them. Is that even possible?
Anything's possible in marketing, and really great marketers are open to any ideas from anywhere.
Wow.
Yeah, they are. Because going back to the point you made earlier, the great marketers that I know will listen to ideas from the most unlikely sources because they want to know. They want to hear what people are saying. They want to hear how their brand is seen. So it's not necessarily this formal, tight structure the whole time. But it's unusual. It's unusual.
Let's talk about going inside of the pitch. Have you seen successful cases where, the agency is very clear about they are fronting certain type of people, someone who's sort of has a certain look or has a certain sort of feel, the tall Italian hunk pitches and he's the front person of the pitch. Are those considerations that we need to think through?
It's reminded me of an article that I read actually the other day, but I'll come back to that. I think that the most important thing in a pitch is the client wants to know, who is my go-to person? So obviously, when an agency is pitching, they're going to put their best team forward, and that's going to be the CEO, the creative director, everybody. But the person who's going to deal with that client on a day-to-day basis has to be in the pitch and has to have a good role to play. I've seen clients walk away from agencies because they haven't heard what that person has to say, or that person hasn't had a role, and worse still, if it's a woman, and all the guys around her have been speaking but haven't allowed her to speak. I've seen that as well. So, yeah.
So there's a lot of sort of ego that happens, and they leave the brief in terms of their own sort of team dynamics. And in there, they allow their emotions to get the better of them. You know, I think that's important. And in terms of structuring the team and understanding the team dynamic, is there someone that should really just sort of lead, almost project manage the pitch in terms of just really sort of driving it, or should it just be sort of a collaborative effort?
No, the best pitches are definitely project managed. And normally it is the business head, the business director, who will probably end up running that piece of business if the agency wins it. That person will normally project manage the whole process, but heavily supported by the CEO and the creative director and the strategic director. It's not possible to put great pitches together without all of that support.
And just the personality of the team. You know, you talk, I've read it in a number of your blogs and so forth, that know your personality. You know, with so many different types of people on the team, how do you manage that? Or do you allow it to happen organically, and then you define the personality and then sort of communicate that back to the team?
Define whose personality?
The team's personality, the agency's personality.
Well, it really is about being authentic. But as we know, people have an effect on each other. So if, let's say, the agency is pitching to a very conservative, very serious-minded client company, on a very serious topic, then they're going to be behaving in a slightly different way than they normally would if they were, let's say, pitching on a really fun piece of business where it's a small campaign that's going to just run its course. So it really depends, and it has an effect on the personality of the agency and the personality of the client, for that matter. So I think that each party has an effect on each other, and it's very hard to say.
I'm with you.
But the most important thing is that the agency shouldn't. Agency people tend to be, because they're salespeople, tend to be chameleon-like, so they tend to reflect the kind of client they're presenting to. And what we always say to them is, try not to do that, because you need to be who you are, not who they are. The marketer is coming to an agency because they want something different.
Sure.
They want something that's going to work for them, that's going to create a whole new area, a whole new that needs to meet an objective. So, and don't try and be like them.
This new world of social media, you know, it's really not new anymore. You know, it's been around for a long time now.
Yeah.
You know, thinking about integrating strategic ideas around social media, etc. How important is it to have social media masters on your team? People who really are ahead of the curve. They understand where it's headed and that sort of thing. Should you have someone on the team who's physically focused on mastering social media?
Yes. Short answer. Yes.
Okay.
Possibly that is one of the things that has changed in recent times, or at least in the last couple of years. First of all, because of social media, clients are able to measure the effect of their campaigns far quicker than they could in the past. In the past, they would have had to do some pre-testing, and then they would have waited for, after the campaign broke, to do some post-testing. It would have all been done empirically or through focus groups. Now, what many agencies do is that they try out an idea on social media, get the feedback, and they have communities that they actually go out and talk to, and they get that feedback, and it happens all the time.
Sure.
And so agencies can actually, and clients can now, start tweaking their campaigns as those campaigns break. Those campaigns can be tweaked as a result of the response they're getting on social media. I mean, one of the things we saw in New York with real-time marketing. Some of these agencies are sitting on such huge amounts of data that they can talk directly to consumers. And as those consumers start responding, they can start tweaking what they're selling.
Wow.
It's happening.
And it seems like the technology and the tools are really mature and fast.
Yes.
I remember earlier in the game, there was like, if you're trending, that's fine, or if the number of people, but the quality of the analysis is becoming very high level and sophisticated. Where do you go find these tools? Where do agencies go? Are there sources that you drive agencies to consider these tools?
No, most of them they've invented themselves.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah. So the fast thinking or the forward thinking agencies have been doing this, like, you know, like the space agency I met 10 years ago. They've been doing this for a long time, and nobody quite knew what they were doing and why they were doing it. But it worked, and it started, and they were obviously one of the pioneers. But now, no, all of them have invented their own. The guys that are successful now are the ones who were doing the investing 10 years ago.
Got it.
And one of the things I saw in New York now, and I hadn't seen it since 2008, since Lehman Brothers closed, because the first year I was in New York, that was that year.
Oh, yeah.
The agencies are reinvesting again. I haven't seen that. Haven't seen that. For the last 7 or 8 years, it's been about survival.
Sure.
But now...
Now they've seen this need to reinvest.
And they're investing in their systems, in their IT, in their tools. I mean, it's a great place to be because, you know, it's a combination of a whole lot of creative thinking and then all of these IT technological tools that are available. And they just keep doing more and more of it. And it's happening here, too.
In terms of the percentage of budget, has social media enabled agencies to spend less, or do you find that they still have to spend the same amount or percentage as back in the day? You know, in terms of percentage you spend on the pitch.
Social media is labor intensive. It doesn't cost the clients very much money. But it's labor intensive for agencies. And there aren't that many agencies who've worked out how to cost it out properly, quite honestly. And they're not making enough money on it. The social media agencies that are only social media, they have probably, I met one in New York a couple of years ago, and they had about 40 clients. And there were about 10 of them in the business. So these are small companies. What we're seeing is far more social media people now coming into the broader agency unit, part of the whole digital agency. They have units. It seems to work well.
Okay, I'm gonna put out a couple of phrases and you can finish them. Okay. invest in one of the first thing you should invest in is just in terms of developing
pitch techniques. Invest time in rehearsal.
Okay.
Buy a clock, because if you've got an hour to pitch in, it's an hour. Don't go over time because it really does not go down well and doesn't work.
The first thing you should do when walking into the boardroom to pitch is?
Greet everybody, smile, and introduce yourself.
Wow. Got it. And the clothes, is it the most important part?
Yes, it is. And it's so funny you ask that because it reminds me of one of the agencies in New York when I was there now. One of the big multinationals, M&C Saatchi, was announcing it had just set up in New York. This is the third time they've tried, or the third time they're doing it, because the various reasons have it's happened. So they've set up with a New York agency, born and bred. You can see both the guys, they're very experienced guys. And at the end of the session they had with us, which was about an hour, the New York agency guy, he wanted to close the deal. So he said, right. He said, any of you, bring the pitches. We want the business, blah, blah, blah. The British guy, the worldwide CEO of the agency group, he said, that's sort of very toe-curling because that's not what British people would do.
Sure.
So yes, close the deal as it suits your agency. I think that you have to ask for the business. If you want the business, you have to ask for it.
Just ask. Like physically go in, yeah, knowing that I have to eventually ask for the,
yeah,
business.
We really want this because of, and the reasons why you think that client will fit into your agency. It's really important.
Now, with all of your experiences, it only makes sense to run masterclasses.
Yeah.
You're going to be doing. Take us through these masterclasses. How are they going to be structured? Who should attend?
Okay. So on the agency side, we've been running masterclasses for the last 6 years now, and they are part of the subscription that, in fact, is the main reason, or one of the main reasons why agency would subscribe to our services. So we give agencies updates on what's happening with legal stuff. So, for example, the protection of private information, what's happening with BE rules. We talk to them about pitching, so we give them pitch tips. We talk to them about chemistry. So we run a whole program for agencies, and they come along. We've got one happening today, in fact, and I'm doing feedback from Ad Forum and 10 trends for 2016 that we've identified. So that's one session, and we've got about 30 agencies coming, which is fantastic. Then the other thing we've done, we started this year in 2015, is the masterclasses for marketers. And this is where we start talking to marketers about anything that would affect their relationships with their agencies, or any aspect of marketing communication and marketing in general that would affect them in their day-to-day work.
Ah.
And that's been really interesting. And there we know we do a number of things, certainly getting the best out of your agency, contracting with your agency, not necessarily how to review in terms of pause and reflect. Let's see what we've done this year. And then we invite experts in. So we have people coming in to talk about how to evaluate creative work against strategy, what to do with it, how to sell it back into the business. Because I don't think a lot of agencies realize that marketers have to then go back into the business and sell the creative concept to the C-suite.
Yes, exactly.
And that's a tough nut.
which brings me to a point I found online called KISS,
yeah,
about keeping it simple. I mean,
yeah,
KISS is an acronym for keep it simple, stupid. And do you guys show people sort of the art of storytelling?
Yeah, I think... you know, agencies, I don't think we need to really do that. What we do, because a lot of agencies will tap into a lot of expertise from all over the world in order to improve how they do things. If we see something that works particularly well, we will show that to agencies. Yeah.
Okay. Hmm. Cool. And then what are the costs? Do you just have to be a member or...
Oh, subscription.
Subscription.
Not membership. Subscribers, our annual subscription fee is very deliberately just under 20,000 rand a year. For an agency, whether you're small or big, it's per agency. So in an agency group will obviously pay quite a lot more because there might be 10 agencies in that group. But we will look after whichever agencies within that group want to be subscribers. And then smaller individual agencies, yeah, it's just under 20,000 a year.
How do you feel about this advice? I found on entrepreneur.com,
mm-hmm,
one of the top sort of six tips, it says, choose not to be the smartest person in the room.
Yeah, yeah. I would say that's really clever because people get very intimidated. And marketers are no exception. And bearing in mind that they don't spend their lives pitching, it's very difficult. And in fact, I was talking to an agency about this the other day. When you're pitching to a marketer, don't exchange knowing looks among the team.
Got it.
Because that indicates...
I know those looks.
You know those looks. And the client immediately thinks, uh-oh, I've said something stupid.
Yes.
and feels very doubly intimidated. So then they don't speak again. So yeah,
they shut down.
Yeah, shut down, and then you don't get them. You don't get the chemistry. So don't be the smartest person. Don't be the one that says, yeah, no, I've worked in your industry for 15 years. I probably know more. You know, don't do that. It's not wise. Keep it to yourself.
Can you share a few trends for 2016?
Okay, so everybody's been talking about connectivity, but actually it's about conductivity. Because
conductivity.
Yes, because now that we're all connected, what are we putting out there on these connections? So what is the content of our connectivity?
Wow.
So yeah, interesting, hey? So that's conductivity.
Okay.
Real-time marketing. People are sitting on lots of data. They can, and there's going to be more and more of that. Some people are quite alarmed about that, by the way, because it's almost invasive, and it's already happening. I was talking to one of the agencies the other day, and they were giving me an example of somewhere, whether it's in the States or the UK, where because people can track, I mean, you think about TripAdvisor, because people can track what you're doing and where you're going, they know where you are.
Specifically, like right now, I know exactly.
Yeah, and then you get served this information. And same on Facebook, of course. I mean, we're seeing that all the time. So real-time marketing is just going to increase more and more. And people, what will people do about that? I mean, some consumers will be happy about that, some won't. So that's going to be, how is that going to be managed? And then I would say the other thing marketers more than ever before are nervous of how to spend their money. There are now so many channels. How do you choose which channel you're going to spend your money in?
Got it.
You know, 40 years ago, there was TV, radio, print and outdoor. That was it. So it was quite easy to work out how to spend it. Now, very different. And so that's a huge trend. And because marketers are nervous about it, they cannot be bullied into spending it just, you know, will there be risk takers or will they take the safe route? That's a big issue and will cause various things to happen.
Well, you've shared extraordinary insights and you've done it effortlessly, which shows you have quite adroit at this. And I really appreciate you taking the time and coming in. And I wish you best on your masterclass later.
Thank you.
I want to know, finally, and I can imagine this is one of the things that maybe hasn't really changed. Final question. How important is that first impression?
It's hugely important. It can make or break the deal. And it even takes me by surprise when we're getting feedback after a pitch with the marketer, the kind of things the marketer says. And they miss nothing.
Wow.
They miss nothing. So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you pioneering so many brilliant ideas, from the chemistry sessions to really helping people sort of understand that there's a lot of brilliance going on here in South Africa already. Mm. And we just need to sort of maximize that and continue collaborating and so forth. If you want to connect with Joanna McDowell, go to www.agencyselection.co.za. Thank you for coming on Branded.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me here.
We want to shift now to our resident expert who has our cyber health bite for today, Rianette Lebowitz. Welcome, Rianette.
Thank you, Timothy. Great show you're having today.
I know. It's right up your alley. I know how much you love marketing.
Yes, and the conductivity thing. I'm going to definitely remember that. So thank you. And thank you for joining me, Rianette, from SafetyNet on this Cyber Health Bite. I'm excited to share some information today with you because it's related to our online health and lifestyles. And I want to ask a question. How long do you think will your friendships last? And when last did you call a friend? When last did you actually pick up the phone to call a friend? And it made me think about the times when I was watching my mom having a phone conversation as a little girl. It was so different from the mobile device conversations my son is observing me having nowadays. My mom would hold the phone while sitting still next to the receiver because she couldn't move away from it. She was attentive, really involved and focused on that conversation, and no one could interrupt. I mean, it was an occasion when someone called or when you made a phone call, and sometimes very expensive, so don't waste the time. Nowadays, we can take a call anytime, while we're driving, while we're making dinner, while we're changing the channels for the youngsters, while scheduling something in our diaries. And we have to ask the question, how are we actually listening? Are we actually hearing those pauses, the tone of voice, and what our friends are actually saying? But let's go back one step more. As human beings, we really long for personal connection. We want to have that relationship in a real way with people. So with social media, we know we've got hundreds of friends and tweets and WhatsApp messages and so forth. But I would like to share six ways for us to stay connected by disconnecting for a bit. First of all, call people on their birthdays. Let's just remember that. People still love to receive a phone call, and those beautiful messages on Facebook are great. But if you actually know the person personally and have their phone number, why not call them next time and wish them personally? Then if someone is going through a hard time, we can use social media to help us, to give us the tools. Like if you see someone had a flat tire, how about calling them that day and just saying, listen, can I help you? Or the next day, or just following up if there's a child that was sick. Whatever, use social media as a tool to connect with people that you haven't seen or that you need to build a relationship with to actually get you there. It's the small stuff, like sending a gift if they're really down in the dumps, which leads me to another one. Schedule face-to-face time and visits. Even if it's in 3 months from now, schedule the meetings and make sure that it happens. And again, this is not for all 600 of your friends on Facebook. It's those real ones, your inner circle, the ones you trust, the ones you want to nurture. Then be there for each other. Oh man, how bad is it when someone is saying that they've lost someone and we just like the post? And we... And that's our way to show we care. Seriously, let's pick up the phone. Let's visit. Let's go knock on that door. Let's go and say, I'm here for you. We don't have to talk. We'll sit next to each other. We can have a glass of wine or a cup of tea, whatever you prefer. And then those wonderful, unexpected calls of a friend who just says, I'm thinking about you. I just wanted to let you know I care. How is it really going? And in this way, we can really develop and use our social networks again to connect them to people that they need to connect with and to help them out with their situations. And then imagine if you can go to the mailbox, a real mailbox. I mean, the one where you use a real key to put in the keyhole and turn the key to get your mail. And there's a letter from a friend, handwritten note to say I care and I really... I do believe in our friendship and our relationship. So these are just tips for us to remember to be responsible in digital space, but also to nurture those relationships in a real, tangible way. So all the best for the week, and that's over to Timothy.
Thank you so much. I think Facebook needs to come up with what I call a real friends data stream. I think that could be really, really valuable. Thank you so much, Rianette. We'll be back next week. Thank you to Joanna McDowell and all of our listeners who paid attention and was engaged. Thank you.
Unbranded on CliffCentral.com.